This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, for Sunday, June 5th, 2005, episode number 8.
The BBC would like to announce that the next scene is not considered suitable for family viewing.
And it looks as though we're in for a splendid afternoon sport on this, the 127th upper-class TWiT of the Year show.
And now for something completely different, we are all TWiTs now.
What a great TWiT!
Excellent.
Here we are once again. Seems like we just did this. God. By the way, I want to apologize to everybody who's trying to get the TWiTcast. You're all trying to get it at once. That's really the fundamental problem. And, you know, you'll get it eventually. It's just trying to get it all on the same day. You know, it's going to be a real traffic jam because people are still getting number 7. And now number 8's going to come out and it's just going to be forget it. What do we do? Kevin, we need more bandwidth.
I got it really fast, actually. I was using BitTorrent, and it came down in just a couple minutes.
I think the best way to get it is BitTorrent, but apparently people don't, I don't know, maybe they don't understand how to use BitTorrent or something. Just real simply, get Azureus, A-Z-U-R-E-U-S. It's free, it's Java-based.
People are afraid of the lawsuits.
Nah, don't be afraid. You can't be sued for BitTorrent.
Well, I know that, and you know that, but I think a lot of people, I've run into 3 people in the last 2 weeks be like, I'm not going to use BitTorrent because I'm going to get sued.
The critical thing is once you're done downloading it, is to simply leave it running so that people can continue to upload or use your upload.
Oh, our listeners, the ones who use BitTorrent, really know that. There's about 1,300 seeds right now for episode 7. So the good news is with all those seeds, it does. It comes down really quickly.
That's awesome.
So let's remind everyone, as long as you're not downloading copyrighted material, you won't get in trouble using BitTorrent. Even if you are downloading copyrighted material, you'll probably never get caught. It's when you're hosting or directing the copyrighted material that you might get sued by a larger organization.
So
it's an amazing tool. Like those day of patches that come out for games.
It's amazing.
You know,
yeah, it's amazing.
Sometimes, and some games that you download nowadays are mods for games run into the hundreds of megabytes, and it's simply the easiest way to get it.
Somebody emailed me the other day saying that they couldn't download an episode of System because their parents wouldn't allow BitTorrent to be installed.
Right.
Well, I can understand that because I've cleaned up some systems where kids haven't stopped downloading stuff and they've been trashed. Yeah. I mean, just nasty, nasty stuff.
Well, I've seen adults do that.
Spyware.
Yeah, everybody.
Certainly not limited to children. I've seen fewer children do that.
Yeah. Kids are smarter than that. The key on this is it use it. It's safe. You're only downloading legal stuff when you're downloading the TWiTcast. There are some businesses, soldiers in Iraq, and we have, by the way, guys, I don't know if you know it, we have a number of listeners who are on active duty in Iraq. They can't get MP3 files. That's blocked by the military, and the BitTorrent ports are blocked because it does use non-standard ports. So for them, I offer a straight download zipped file, and that way it's just a plain old download of a zip, and they can get that. That's at leoville-downloads.com/twit. But I prefer you use, that comes off my server, I prefer you use BitTorrent if you can. Are we all in agreement Azureus is the best? I mean, I just think it works. It's
definitely.
And you could there's an RSS plugin for it, so you could make it work just like a podcast client.
Exactly. Or
so
you know,
can automatically
that is really
it.
Handy.
Yeah. So it's azureus.sourceforge.net. It's a free download. Install it. Somebody said they're having trouble with the RSS client feed. I don't know. But all you have to do is you have to go to the TWiT site, twit.tv/, this is the BitTorrent site, HI-B. That's for high quality BitTorrent version. So that's, again, twit.tv/hi-b. Of course, you all have it now, so I don't know who I'm telling this to. And then if you have Azureus, download the .torrent file. Just right-click on it and save it, and then double-click it. It'll be a blue frog. That's the default icon. Download it and double-click it. Azureus will launch, and you'll get it in like 3 minutes. You'll get it really quickly, and then leave it open so that other people can get it. There right now, as I'm looking at this, 1,557 seeds of the 7th episode, the last episode, and 322 people are downloading it. And I guarantee you, because there's so many seeds, they're all getting it as fast as their bandwidth can handle it. It's just the easiest way to get it. So that's enough of that. As I've said a few times, just taking some time, but we now have two big players, two really big media companies that want to distribute Twit, and we're going to let them do it because it's non-exclusive. They're not going to use advertising or anything. So this will all be a moot soon. There'll be plenty of ways to get Twit. We know you want to get it. Back now to the news, boys and girls. Oh, let me introduce you all. First of all, Kevin Rose.
Yes, hello.
Beautiful Los Angeles. Things going well for you, sir?
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Calm down after the system.
Day to day.
Yeah, are you taping a new system? You working on it?
Yeah, new system comes out this week, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, another episode.
Oh, you wasted no time. That's great. Robert Herron is here, the lab man, the lab meister.
Hello, hello.
He works at PC Magazine, right?
Yes, for their website. I run their HDTV lab.
And
checking out the latest and greatest.
That's his favorite topic, but he talks about everything. We, of course, welcome David Prager. Hasn't been with us too many times. This is his second TwitCast, third if you include the pilot. And David is still at TV.
And I work for a cable television network.
A small cable television network devoted to games, gear, gadgets, and G-Jaws. What is the fourth
gigabytes.
G? Gigabytes.
Gigabytes, I think.
Not anymore. That was girls.
Girls. Games, gear. What is the big show now on G4? It's Attack of the Show or is it X-Play?
The X-Play and Attack of the Show are the two main shows.
What about that the donut show, the driving donuts? What's it called?
You know what? That's another show that is turning a lot of heads just because I guess it's just cars and girls. So
can't go wrong.
I guess not.
And he's a producer there. He's the guy who put the web server up the guy's butt.
Oh, jeez.
You actually didn't do that by hand.
No.
You had a surgeon.
No, we got a doctor. He had some tools
and a shaky
That was
license.
Your idea, though, right, David? Wasn't it?
No, it was absolutely not my idea.
He implemented it. It wasn't
his
idea.
He said, hey, how about we do this? And,
yeah. He was the guy who figured out how you could do it. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, let's not forget the star of our show, the chairman of the board of Slam Dance Industries, Mr. Patrick Norton.
I'm still trying to get my head away from that whole web server butt thing. Hi,
everybody. So sorry. Hey, at least they didn't use a sledgehammer to do it.
Is there a wipe tracker in there?
So
where are the log files?
This is we're taping this in the evening of Sunday, June 5th. Tomorrow, June 6th, Steve Jobs gets up on the stage at the Worldwide Developer Conference, and if the Wall Street Journal is to be believed, if CNET is to be believed, he will announce that future Macs will not have PowerPC chips in them, but will have instead Intel chips. That, to me, is a huge story. Huge story. You know, frankly, I've been saying this is the end of the world for Apple, that Apple is, this is Apple shooting itself in the foot, committing harakiri. It's Steve Jobs' ultimate act of arrogance. And the first person I thought of to call was John C. Dvorak, another member of the Twit team who hasn't been here because his Skype is still not working. But so I actually used this technology they called a telephone and called John, and I asked him, what he thought about all this.
So you sure make this sound dour. I have just the opposite take that you have on this. I mean, you're making it sound like, first of all, let's go over this. And I did have this written up in 2003, and I expected it to happen last year in 2004 based on what I heard that was going on. It's possible that it took longer to do the middleware part, which is going to be the things that allow some of the software to run on the new platform, much the same way the PowerPC made its transition. Now, take a look at the timing on this, though. We had a 10-year period of the 68,000, then a 10-year period of the PowerPC, and now we're going to have a 10-year Intel period. I don't see that this is such a big deal in terms of the progress that the company's been making. I think this is going to be one of the greatest benefits for Apple that the company's ever could ever imagine.
Well, what do they stand to gain?
Well, what they stand to gain, first of all, is to, and I've been arguing that they should be doing this they should have started doing this maybe 10 years ago, which is if they can bring out a standardized Intel platform running this BSD Unix that they have. Oh, I'm sorry, it's OS X. running on the on a kind of a standardized PC platform, they can also manufacture standard PCs for people who want to maybe still use Windows, even though I think that there actually may be a swing toward OS X for Intel, or which I call a Macintel.
So you think there'd be a you think they're going to make a dual boot system that runs both Windows and Apple? Is that the?
I think it's doable, and I think also if I had a choice, and I think I could speak for most PC users, even though you've abandoned the platform, I could say for most PC users, and I've just written this up for PC Magazine, it'll be running tomorrow, I think most of these computers that we have on our desks, the PC users, are, have all the appeal of a 1977 Plymouth.
I agree with you.
People will spend a few extra dollars to have a good-looking computer. That means Apple can sell against Dell and HP the same machine with a premium price, getting the margins that those other guys will never get, and pretty much decimate the market. I think this is probably the biggest possibly the biggest thing Apple has ever done in terms of potentially becoming a dominant computer.
But what about the Adobes and the Microsofts? How are they going to, are they going to rewrite their software? What are they going to do?
Well, they've done it before, and they, in fact, Adobe seems to rewrite its software every 2 years, or every year for that matter. I mean, anyway, I mean, they're all constant. This is a recompilation thing anyway. Adobe already has the software running on the x86 system. How difficult can it be?
Oh, it could be very difficult because their Windows version relies on Windows API, which
is
non-existent.
There's a middleware company that Apple's involved with right now, and I have their name somewhere, but this is going to take care of that issue. This is not going to be as big a deal as you make it out to be.
So the middleware company I think you're thinking of is oh, I had the name here. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's a forgettable name.
It's not a memorable name. Is it Transitive?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. In the change from 68,000 to PowerPC, these were very similar chips. They were able to make it possible for the operating system to run both with something called fat binaries. They had the program could run in both modes, and there was a transitional period. It wasn't a very happy period.
Of course, and this won't be either. And in fact, one of the other things that Apple did was bring out that Power Macintosh upgrade card, which they can do again. You know, so people can use the old machines and then put this card in and make a transition slowly. My argument is this, is that Apple, this is the time for Apple to do it. They can suffer through a transition like this, which I agree with that part. It's not going to be easy. But with the iPod, iTunes thing making tons of money for them, this is the time to make this move because this long term is a fantastic idea.
Well, I think it's gutsy. I think we're going to look at tomorrow as the day Apple committed suicide. And here's why I think the exact opposite, John. First of all, they're on a platform that is far from moribund. I think that the Cell chip, which is a PowerPC-based chip, is a very exciting future chip. I think the Intel platform, on the other hand, has run out of steam. I think they're moving to a processor platform that is seeing the end of its line.
Well, there's a couple things there. One is that, you know, apparently the story has it that Steve was, like, stiffed by IBM concerning the Cell chip and kind of put in second place to
that
Sony.
That, I believe. I can now, see this being an arrogant move on Steve's part, an ego move, but I think it's going to be suicide.
I, again, disagree. The other thing is about the Cell chip. Both Jobs has been poo-pooing it as lousy. And the other guy who of course, doing both of this is, you know, these are questionable sources for criticism. I mean, Steve says this chip is no good, and then also Bill Gates has, you know, again, you know, I agree that this doesn't, you know, this is coming from a guy who's got a competitive product.
Right.
But at the same time, Gates is complaining about this chip, and some of the people within Intel have some issues with this chip.
So you think
with
IBM...
The new multi-threaded, multi-core Intel chips are nothing to be sneezed at.
No, I agree. The new, the Pentium D and the hyper-threading and then dual cores, they're trying to keep this chip's family alive, but it's not a long-term solution. You think the G5 is the end of the line for PowerPC from IBM?
Well, I mean, they probably will continue to upgrade the chip for their own internal uses, but...
What about the notion of Intel maybe doing something new for Apple? You think that's credible?
No.
It's going to be an Intel x86 chip.
It has to be. I mean, if they did something like what you just described, which nobody said, I mean, that's purely... just off the
highly
wall.
Speculative, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, there's no evidence of this. I mean, of course, you never know. But we would have known about something. I mean, when my original thesis, when I first stumbled onto the meetings, I had, you know, thought what might happen that would be interesting, and I thought it would be kind of interesting if Apple went to the Itanium, because they could use it for... They could use it for the servers, right. And it would be different, and Intel's begging to, for people to buy the thing.
Well, that at least has a future. The x86 under Intel is it's end-of-line product.
Well, I mean, I'm not in agreement with that, because, I mean, I know where you're coming from saying that, but in fact, you know, with the legacy out there and the fact that this chip is just getting faster and faster with the multi-cores, and I expect...
Yeah, but Intel says no 4 gigahertz.
No, nobody wants to do 4 gigahertz. They'd rather do more cores. I mean, you can get double the performance by doubling the number of cores on the same die because things are shrinking so much.
I have two cores in my G5 right now. I have two processors.
Well, you're ahead of me.
But most people do. We're talking to John C. Dvorak, columnist for PC Magazine, and certainly a guy who, if anybody knows what's going on. So you believe this CNET report. You think this will happen tomorrow?
Yeah, I do. And the Wall Street Journal is also kind of... you know, saying it's a done deal. I mean, and there's a blogger out there, which I linked to in my blog, if you go to Dvorak.org/blog, who made this observation that he found a language observation. He looked at the articles and noticed that they weren't, neither CNET nor the Wall Street Journal were had any weasel words in their stories.
They seem adamant, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like, you know, this is, we got this on good authority. And the newspapers nowadays are so gun-shy about not weaseling out of, you know, some of these assertions that when they don't have them in there, that's actually a signal. So,
well, especially with Steve Jobs. You don't want to be a rumor monger with Steve Jobs. So
yeah, well,
you have to wonder if somebody from Apple is actually feeding this story to the Journal and to CNET.
Well, you know, he's done that before because he's... you're seeing it looks like it's picking the story up from the Journal, but you know, Jobs plays favorites with the high-end media, and most of the people are irked with him about it because he'll, you know, put everybody on an embargo to a certain date and then give the story to Newsweek so they can run it the day before.
Or Mossberg.
Yeah, Mossberg's a big, he's like a kind of a stooge for Apple.
And he's at the Journal, and I could easily see them feeding this to Mossberg and him feeding it upstairs.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Excellent.
Well, I it scares the heck out of me. It doesn't seem like it's necessary. I think Apple's in a good position right now. It is a very gutsy move. I mean, your scenario is attractive. If they could start shipping computers that would run both Windows and OS X, I think there's a big market for that.
I think it's a huge market for it, and I think the other upside for Apple would be that they'd get... One of the problems they're always going to have with only selling 1 million computers a quarter compared to the 100 to 175 million machines that are sold every year, this is a ridiculously low number, is that you can't get the developer interest that you can to a market that has 100 million.
So you think that's the carrot they're going to offer these guys for rewriting all of their software? Do you think Microsoft's going to play along? Office is critical.
I think Microsoft, no, I don't think it's as critical as you think it is anymore. I think, and besides that, if you bring out a dual boot machine, who cares? But the point is that, you know, I think... Apple's been trying to get out from underneath Mike. I mean, that's where they've been bringing out products that kind of compete with Microsoft products.
That's true.
And ever since Microsoft or Macintosh Basic, the product that was killed by Microsoft, the people in the Mac community would love to just ditch Microsoft and go off and do their own thing. And, you know, and there's a lot of good stuff out there that runs on Unix machines. Yeah. I mean, some of it has crappy menuing systems, unfortunately, because the Unix guys, they think weird. But, you know, except for that picadillo, I think most of this stuff, I think you can outfit a OS X machine with no Microsoft material on it at all and do very well for yourself.
Would you get in line to buy one of these machines?
Asking me about buying stuff is funny.
I know you don't have to, but if for some reason you didn't get one, would you?
This is the kind of machine that if I was like a computer buyer,
yeah,
which I'm not. I'm a writer about computers. I don't go out, you know. I just basically testing stuff all the time, so I don't worry about buying stuff. But if I was a computer buyer and I had the lineup of different machines out there, and Apple, which has already developed its name as a kind of a, like I mentioned in the column tomorrow, kind of the Lexus compared to the Fords and Chevys of Dell and HP, I think I would buy the Lexus. I have a Lexus. I would buy a Lexus computer. I mean, something that's a little nicer. It's maybe, you might think it's better made. It probably is the same company in China making them all, but definitely a better looking machine with a lot of cachet I would get the Macintosh in a minute.
All right. Well, there you have it. John, thank you on such short notice for coming on the show.
Anytime, Leo. You know me.
So there you have it. John C. Dvorak. He says it's a done deal, and it's a great idea. You heard me. I just don't buy it.
Why do you think it's a bad deal, Leo?
I'll give you the three reasons. All right? Reason number one, all your software has to be rewritten, and it is non-trivial. I know everybody's going crazy saying, oh, no, the drivers are already there. Believe me, just because Adobe makes a Windows version of Photoshop and a PowerPC version of Photoshop doesn't mean it's easy at all to make a Intel X version of Photoshop. That's just a whole new kettle of fish. And no matter what, you don't just recompile. You rewrite, and it's a lot of work. And, they went through this 10 years ago. I don't know if they're going to go through it again. The only thing that might convince them is maybe there's a giant market, so maybe we will. Secondly, why x86? Why not Athlon? Why not Opteron? Why saddle yourself with a company that's at the end of the line? It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Hey, Roger?
No, I was just wondering, did you mean end of the line for Intel or just for the x86 family?
Well, end of the line for x86. You got to make a decision. Are you going Itanium or are you going, you think it'll be an Itanium? By the way, let me introduce Roger Chang, who's somehow taken the place of David Prager. I don't know how it happened, but it's magic. Roger is writing about games for GameSpot over at CNET. And by the way, Roger, maybe you have some insight. How did CNET get this story?
Well, actually, I work for GameSpot, and the way CNET actually separates its division, they keep it pretty much behind closed doors.
Right. Let's go back. So anyway, those are two points, and I'm sure there's a third, but address those, if you will, gentlemen. You think it's a good idea, Patrick?
I just think in terms of the sheer volume of the chips and the fact that they've got to be able to get the chips cheaper. They've got to have access to better chipsets. It just seems like from Dvorak had a really good point. If they're tapping into an architecture that's going out to 125, 175 million PCs a year, it's a lot easier to get deals.
So you're thinking they had to for economic reasons?
I think they probably had to for economic reasons, and it's probably getting really difficult to compete. There's still the reason Intel always held on to the megahertz numbers on the processors is because the marketing people always said if people went in and they go for the biggest number of megahertz, even if the performance is unrelated. That's why Cyrix did branding that sort of upsold their from their clock speed up to what their actual performance was. AMD's done that.
You think Microsoft's going to rewrite Microsoft Office and this is exactly the moment Microsoft's been waiting for to dump Apple.
Well, how important is Microsoft Office?
It's the number one selling application on Macintosh.
What percentage? What percentage of the users actually use it?
Well, you have to have it if you want to live in a Windows world and you want to use a Mac.
I use OpenOffice.
Well,
I use OpenOffice. I don't live on Microsoft Office.
You can use OpenOffice on Mac, but you have to run XWindow. Here's the third reason. I think it's a very compelling reason. It's the Osborne effect. They're announcing now that in 6 months the Mini will be based on Intel, and in 18 months, all of their products will be based on Intel. They're not going to sell one more Mac for 18 months. That's it. Who would buy a Mac now knowing you're going Intel and every bit of software you buy is obsolete?
Yeah,
this is a stupid move, I'm telling you. We're going to look back at this and say this is when Steve Jobs fell on his sword.
Nah, I don't know about that.
All right, Kevin, you explain it to me.
This is so exciting. I'm stoked. I have two Macs. I have three PCs. And the only reason I don't just have one computer is because I want OS X, yeah, and I also want to be able to play my games.
I do like a dual boot. I do like, and Dvorak brought that up, a dual boot PC Mac is attractive.
But that's a total fantasy.
You don't think that'll happen?
It can happen if it's based on Intel chips. And the other thing is you don't have to dual boot at all. They can run a nice little emulator that runs inside
that's
OS
a good point.
X.
That's a
that
good
will
point.
Be native on the x86-based processor, so you really won't see the slowdown that you would if you're running it in like a processor emulation type mode.
You could do. You're exactly right. You don't have to do a dual boot. You could just have
I'll
dual
buy
Windows.
Emulatable or hackable, but I don't see Steve ever signing off on doing a dual boot Macintosh system.
Why are you so stoked about this then, Kevin? Let's say you can only buy a Mac Intel. Is it the dual boot that gets you excited?
Well, the main thing that gets me excited is that I've always been a huge fan of Apple hardware. I mean, the way they design things, the computer, if you take apart a G5, open it up, play
beautiful.
With it.
Beautiful. It's beautiful inside.
Everything is laid out so clean and so well, and the power supply, every piece of that computer is just so well engineered, it blew me away. And I would love to have, I would pay a few extra $100 for a nice Apple that could run my, you know, not only my Mac applications, but my Windows as well.
Robert Herron, what do you think?
I see this maybe as a first stage for Apple in terms of creating competition for Microsoft in the operating systems suite down the road. If their software suddenly is x86 compatible, then what's to keep them from, you know, maybe making a better operating system for and possibly throw more competition to Windows?
See, that's a great question, Robert, because are they going to release OS X as a standalone product
Never.
That you can install
Never.
On any x86? You don't think so?
Apple's a hardware company.
It's true. You're right.
They are not a software company.
Well, you know,
it's also there's a nightmare in terms of legacy coverage for hardware on the Windows side. They've never had to address on the.
Then
on
all
the
of
Mac
a sudden,
side.
They would have to address that. You're right. I mean, they own the hardware. They don't have to worry about it. They know exactly
what
they're running.
What you do at that point is you do like what BOS did, and that is when you start to release it, you only select, you know, here's 15 motherboards that we're compatible with. Here's 10 different chipsets. Here's 10 different video cards. Very limited hardware support.
So it's
the latest and greatest.
Like an OS X certified motherboard, OS X certified video card. I mean, you know, it's interesting because Apple has a lot of the content creation software. I mean, they have Shake, they have a few other 3D rendering.
Motion,
as well as,
Live,
oh, they
Final
rule
Cut.
The video space.
So, I mean, it would be feasible that, you know, Steve could be thinking that, you know, there's so many people kind of already invested in that software and that technology and that kind of learning that they had to do for it, that they'll want to switch over, you know, down the road when they require more powerful hardware and they acquire, you know, updated software to run it. It's like, we granted it's running on the architecture, but from their point of view, it should still feel and look like an OS X Macintosh.
I could see this if, you know, PowerPC was dead, if IBM wasn't innovating, if it were kind of a moribund, you know, processor family, well, and I can see making the move. But IBM is an innovator. They're the first to use copper. They're doing this cell chip. I know Steve Jobs poo-poos the cell chip, but I think it's going to be
What's the software transition? You know what I mean? It's like, what's worse, the software transition from the G5 to the cell processor, or the software transition from the G5 to
Intel?
The Intel
easily. The cell processor has a PowerPC controller chip. Now I'm speculating, but because it's a PowerPC controller chip, it's PowerPC family. I think it's going to be an easier transition, a much easier transition. Look what happened. Microsoft has gone to PowerPC for Xbox. PlayStation has gone to Cell for the PlayStation 3. Apple is going upstream. They're going the wrong direction.
Yeah, but those are also relatively closed platforms, and they're primarily looking at gaming performance.
But they're going to sell millions, and gaming performance is very similar to 3D rendering, to MP3 conversion, to digital video. It's the stuff we do. I think they're going against the trend in processors right now.
They may be bucking the trend in processors, but I think what they're really going after here is they've realized that people won't switch unless they have that, you know, certain application or that certain game that can run on their Mac. And the true way to do this, the best way to do it, would be to run native x86 based, where you wouldn't have to have a crazy emulator. It could just run right inside of OS X.
But remember that most of these games are written to a Windows API, to a DirectX API. They're more tied to Windows than they are tied to Intel. You have to run Windows.
Right, you would have to have the kernel running with inside there. But there's just like the way virtual PC operates right now, how you can launch a Windows-based application directly from the taskbar. It would be the same thing, but without the emulation.
So what is Microsoft's take on this? Is this good for Microsoft or bad for Microsoft? Does Bill Gates support this? Because if Bill Gates says there's no way they're going to be able to run Windows on this thing, they're not going to run Windows on it. And do you think Bill Gates is going to say that? Or is he going to say, oh, good, another chance to make some money? I don't think
so. Well, why would he say there's no way, though? I mean,
because it's a huge threat. First of all, it's a threat. If this works, it's a threat to Windows. And he doesn't. I think inherently he doesn't like this whole idea. It's Apple saying, "Hey, we're going to move over to your side."
Oh, I think he hates the idea. But the thing is that he can't stop it. If it's x86 based, anyone can put Windows on there. As long as Apple allows it. I know Apple could stop it if they wanted to.
Yeah, and I just think that if normal users are going to do it, it has to be with the cooperation of Microsoft. Because they own, for one thing, they own the emulator, Soft PC.
It's interesting.
Would you buy one, Leo?
Oh, of course. I'd buy a dual boot Windows Mac machine. I guess I would. I mean, you know, most of us, all of us live in a dual processor world. We have Windows and Macs. And that's a satisfactory solution for me right now. I do most of my work on Macs, but, you know, this tablet PC is great. I mean, I'm using it for, you know, as a date book. $2,000 day timer.
Very expensive date book.
It is, but it's great.
Big, breakable, and it won't fit in your pocket. And by the way, it'll last a half a day.
It's almost as small as my day timer.
You know,
it only costs 10 times more.
You know, it's interesting. I noticed that somebody was commenting on one of the issues Apple had with the Cell processor was that there was no VMX Altavec, or there wasn't a sophisticated, sophisticated Altavec
support.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole machine is an Altavec machine. It's SIMD in hardware. I mean,
yeah, but they'd have to redo all of the code that was made for Altavec.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. Well, they're going to redo code no matter what now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, there's no question you've got OS X in the lab running on Intel. I mean, they've had that all along.
Yeah, Markiplier project is what they call it.
Yeah, I mean, that's easy. I'm not worried about the operating system. I'm not worried about drivers. I'm just application developers. You know who you're going to leave behind? Maybe you won't leave Macromedia behind or Adobe behind. Although none of these companies have much love for Apple anymore.
It would be interesting to know just what percentage of either, you know, especially Macromedia or Adobe, what percentage of their sales are still to the Macintosh platform.
It's telling that Steve's making this announcement at the developers conference. Clearly, right. The announcement is he's going to have to really kiss some butt over there and tell the ISVs, the software vendors, we love you. We're going to support you. You've got to develop for this. He went through this in 1994 when they went from to PowerPC. This is even worse. Now, maybe it's easier in some respects because they know Intel. But, nowadays you don't write to the processor. You write to the operating system. You write to the API.
So do you think the key here is going to be a suite that he announces saying, hey, this is the one suite where you'll be able to develop your application and then easily port it to Windows if you want to, selling them on that?
He has to do something. You know what, Kevin? You hit the nail on the head. I hadn't thought of that, but that's exactly what he has to do. He has to say, we have tools that will develop. You write once, it runs on both. You're exactly right, Kevin. That's what he has to do. They may be able to do that. Now that's compelling.
So will I be able to get a G5 in like a shuttle case in like 3 years?
I don't think anybody will be getting a G5 in 3 years if this keeps up. You'll have to get an Xbox. All right. I think we've done this to death. Let's just go around the horn and cast a thumbs up or thumbs down. Good for Apple, bad for Apple. Kevin Rose?
Thumbs up.
Robert Herron?
I'd say thumbs down for the hardware side.
Roger Chang?
I would say thumbs up for software and thumbs down for the hardware.
Oh, you little weasel. Patrick Norton?
Hey, if it makes for a cheaper Mac, great. But I still don't believe it's going to happen.
I believe it's going to happen, and I think it's going to be the end of the line for Apple. I'm very disappointed. Item two, WiMAX. Patrick, you talked with Intel about WiMAX this week.
Yeah.
What's the latest? You
remember the idea that WiMAX was mostly hype?
Yeah.
Well, it's still mostly hype, but it's hype that's going to be in. It's hype. They're actually claiming there's some interesting stuff online. Basically, WiMAX is a microwave replacement for cable or DSL distribution of broadband. It's going to be capped at about 1 Mbps, and people are excited mostly because they have this vision of being able to go anywhere in a metropolitan area and connect to the net.
Let me just correct something. You said 1 Mbps.
Yeah.
1 MB/s? 1 megabit's like that's like the old home connect. What are you talking about here? It's 11 megabits right now for 802.11b.
If they can guarantee a 1 megabit, that's still not that bad. If that's like a solid guaranteed up and down,
that's one megabit would be pretty good.
Not for down.
Well, I mean, think about it. I have a 3 megabit right now, and I don't even hit 1 megabyte when I'm downloading certain things. If this is like more along the lines of a
you know.
So you think if it's an ISP kind of a, all right.
Is WiMAX line of sight?
No, it is definitely not line of sight. That's part of what's exciting about it.
No, you're right. Typical end-user WiMAX bandwidth is expected to be in the range of 512 kilobits to 2 megabits. So you're right. It's competing not with Wi-Fi. It's competing with it's an ISP solution. It's competing
That's what I said.
DSL. All right. Okay. So this is guaranteed. So every single person's going to get 1 megabit.
Well, anyway.
Well, no. I'm curious. This is.
It comes across like a utility, something that would be provided, you know, rather than dealing with relatively slow modem speeds for just plain old telephone service.
Right.
You can at least have a megabit anywhere that's as free as water, per se.
Well, I don't know about free as water, because there's what's interesting is in the basically this summer they're going to start doing WiMAX as a fixed WiMAX tests are going to start this summer, and they expect it to start rolling out in the very late winter or early spring of 2006. And the idea is it's basically fixed to your house or fixed to your business as a competitor to cable or DSL. The next stage is going to take about another year or about a year behind is going to be mobile WiMAX, which is going to be urban metropolises primarily being covered. The Wi-Fi distribution is kind of, I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting idea, and I think for smaller towns it works pretty well. But it's definitely been up in arms for wireless distribution anywhere other than Philly, I think.
Right.
Is this do you see this as something like maybe in a second generation of what Ricochet was trying to do, or is this what cities?
It was amazing.
Well, yeah. I think the true second generation of Ricochet is going to be 3G, you know, 3G and 4G coming over cell phones.
That's RF. This is at microwave frequencies. So it's, So,
there's going to be, I mean, between 3G, WiMAX, existing Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi hotspots. I mean, Sprint's talking about taking advantage of WiMAX because basically you can cover more territory with fewer cells. You know what I mean? You don't have to roll as many trucks to get the network up and running, or you can take what is essentially a whole lot of Wi-Fi cells and reduce the number of them.
So essentially, it's kind of an intermediate technology between Wi-Fi and 3G. It's a competitor to 3G.
Because remember, the idea, though,
it's cheap, to roll out. Much cheaper than 3G.
It's much cheaper than 3G, but 3G is also regulated. 3G is restricted in how it can be distributed based on having to be associated with a cell phone network. And basically having to deal. The idea is it's a pure data technology, whether or not it's not designed, it's not a
voice technology
is being repurposed for data, which is one of the issues that's coming up with 3G, because certainly Sprint, I mean, all of the networks have played games here and there with whether or not you can actually access their network over particular cell phones, or how you can, either by shutting off Bluetooth or turning it on, or allowing or not allowing USB connections. And WiMAX is, you know, and the other thing that Intel says is they're investing more money in 3G than they are in WiMAX, and they're pretty heavily invested in WiMAX. But I think both of those, I think there's going to be a lot of competing technologies in, you know, probably about 2 years to bring broadband, at least in the major urban markets.
And that's great. I mean, just the whole point is, who cares? Competition's good. Competition is good. I mean, it drops prices. It's good for consumers. So that's good no matter what, whether you want to use WiMAX or not.
Yeah.
Is it symmetric for the most part?
That's a really good question that I haven't seen addressed yet.
See, now that would be, if I could get a megabit up and down, I'd be very interested. That's a T1 line. Almost a T1 line. That's of interest, right?
Then VoIP is also interesting in that respect,
with cell phones
now incorporating.
Well, that's the limit on Skype, is it's not the downstream, it's the upstream that's keeping us from sounding great.
Right.
So, final issue, because we're running out of time here, and I'm going to give this one to Kevin Rose. I should really give it to Robert Herron. ICANN has approved the XXX domain name.
Ta-da!
Are you happy, Robert?
I'm happy.
Now instead of strippers, strippers.com, it's strippers.xxx.
It sounds like it's good for the industry, so why not?
I think it's a, I think it's a good thing just to have. I mean, I know you say you're setting up a red light district on the internet, but at least we know where it is now. The red light district's there. It's just everywhere now. Let's move them all off. Can you make the porn guys go to XXX?
I think they would want to.
Well, some would.
That means someone would start would have to start regulating.
Right.
You know, what, decide who what kind of content is considered adult.
Well, in theory, you do it now with .edu and .mil and .gov. You could, I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't say if you're going to have an adult. Well, I'll give you a good example. Playboy.com. They're never giving up Playboy.com. And they don't want to be Playboy.XXX because they don't consider themselves XXX.
But, I mean, none of the existing sites are going to give up their existing URL. To, you know, maybe news sites. But, I mean, think about all the squatting that's done every time somebody comes up with .biz or .tv.
Right.
it will make filtering a lot easier for parents to use XXX.
That's why I like it. You know, or if you want to, or conversely, if that's what you're looking for, you know where to go. You know what you're getting. I think, frankly, we should register twit.XXX, just in case.
Well, mostly you want to register it just so somebody doesn't, you know, link to donkey stuff. twit.XXX.
Interesting that you bring up donkey.
They also approved, and this didn't get as much attention, .mobi. What's that for?
It's a really... .mobi is really funky. It's
is that
Microsoft
for bald mix artists?
No, it's a cell phone content specific address.
So it, like if you went to a kind of a WAP site,
basically this would be there's not a whole lot of information out on it, but the idea is that this is it's also not a lot of information of how proprietary this format would be or closed.
Oh, it's not. But it's not just a TLD. It's a format.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Whatever happened? Was it WAP? Was that what it was called? Remember, there was that protocol.
Wireless access protocol.
No, that for the. Maybe it was. It was for small handheld websites.
Yeah, for cell phones.
Yeah, WAP. Whatever happened to that?
It's still out there.
Are there WAP sites?
There's versions of all different types of sites that you can access over WAP.
Oh,
yeah.
A lot of news.
I just don't think it's. It didn't really catch on now.
Maybe .mobi will.
Well, it's Microsoft, Nokia, and Vodafone.
Oh, well, there you go. there you go. Anything else anybody is anxious to talk about? Roger, you see any exciting new games on the horizon?
You know, summer, believe it or not, for gaming is generally kind of the dry season.
Kids are outside. They're enjoying the fresh air.
When September starts rolling around, you'll see a lot of new games. Everyone's basically waiting for all the 360 stuff to start pouring out, or at least the announcements for 360 stuff to start pouring out, because that's supposedly going to be the first next-gen console on the market. Everyone wants to see what the games are for that particular system.
Right.
But from what I understand, every time a new generation of consoles come out, there's actually a dip in game sales because most people are usually saving up.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen to Apple for the next 18 months. Get ready, Steve. Jeez.
Oh, we're going to wait.
So should I hold off on buying my new G5 until later when they're like...
Well, what you tell me. What do you think?
Prices? I just bought a PowerBook. I need to sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to do a buy it now for like 4 hours right now on eBay.
You see? You see what I'm saying here? This is bad.
Hoard the classic Apple hardware quickly.
But you know what? It's kind of weird because there's a lot of people like me who are looking at Apple, you know, currently looking at upgrading Mac hardware just to take advantage of the new Final Cut Pro software, the new Shake, the new all the new kind of compositing and video editing software, because there's, you know, a lot of post production houses are now moving more independent, and they're trying to get away from larger studios that, you know, rely on Avid and want to be able to do stuff on their own without.
The good news is because Apple makes those programs, they'll appear on Intel immediately. But it's just the non Apple programs you're going to be waiting for. Look how long it took Quark to do a PowerPC version of Quark Express. It took.
So you don't think it would be quicker with an x86 architecture? You think it'd be longer?
Yeah, it's you know, you got big Endian versus little Endian.
Do anything?
Yeah. Well, that's true. But I mean, it took 3 or 4 years. People had to use OS 9 until very recently if they wanted to use Quark.
I still have OS 9.
Good. Maybe it'll run on Intel.
Actually, you know, with Basilisk, I can kind of sort of run OS 8.
I still have my OS 7.5 installed this somewhere.
Wow. Wow.
Just kidding.
What's the oldest version of Apple you run? We have a contest. All right, gang. I think we've done enough. Two twits in 3 days is more than anyone should really have to do. Thank you, Roger Chang, for dialing in. It's great to have you. We're going to have to send you a recorder so you'll sound as good as the rest of us. Next week, let's use TeamSpeak, Robert, and maybe that'll make it a little bit better.
Certainly.
Don't know what happened to David Prager. I think maybe it was because I insulted G4. Do you think it had to do with the server up the guy's butt? That he disappeared.
If it was the server up the guy's butt, I'd be more worried about the audience than David. But I think David got confused. I think he got cut off and then came back in and didn't understand what was going on with the Dvorak guy.
Oh, maybe that's what happened.
So he wasn't doing it at G4 and Hirshhorn came over and pressed the button.
I think maybe. Could have happened. Oh, well. We can talk freely since none of us here have anything to do with it. Kevin Rose, Robert Herron, Patrick Norton, Roger Chang. I'm Leo Laporte. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'll find out what happens tomorrow. Maybe we'll do a special episode and to recant. What do you call it? Recant?
Recap?
Recant. No, you take it all back.
Yeah, recant.
Recant. I got it right the first time. I can't stand it.
Yeah, I'm going to try to see if I can get into the WWDC.
We should
tomorrow.
Go down. Let's all just go down. We'll say, hey, we're here.
Yes,
we're
I
the
can't
twits.
Wait till I get up there.
Well, the twits. Are you moving up here? There's still some debate over that. Are you?
Yeah, still going back and forth, but okay. Looks like it. We'll find out. I'll let you know more next week.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. That's it for Episode 8 of This Week in Tech. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. If you want to know more about This Week in Tech, visit our website, thisweekintech.com. While you're there, we'd appreciate it if you'd contribute. This Week in Tech is free, but your donation keeps us going and flowing without commercials. Our recommended donation is a mere $2 a month recurring subscription. If you have a question for This Week in Tech, leave voicemail on Skype at This Week in Tech, or you can call or fax 206-339-339. TWIT. You can also email a wave or MP3 to questions at thisweekintech.com. Please begin your question with your name or handle and location and keep it to under 30 seconds. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next Sunday on This Week in Tech.
Sure.
I have some banner left over from last time. Let's use that.
Is it the witty and charming banner?
All right, guys.
We went over like the cheese demo.
The cheese demo. I'll never forget that. Patrick snoring in the back while I'm trying desperately to explain digitization using cheese.
I should point out, I was very tired. I'd been up very late running benchmarks.
That was so depressing. I mean, this was like in the first 6 months of of Call for Help. And I'm using cheese, slicing cheese to show sampling, right? And I have this long brick of cheese and I'm slicing it. And it's not going very well. And I've got sweat on my upper lip.
This is brilliant, by the way.
It's in conception it is. Maybe not in execution. I mean, it just was flopping. And I'm struggling around with this and it's just not working. I'm breaking into a sweat. And then I look up and there in the back of the studio, Patrick Norton fast asleep. I'm not kidding. You were out. And it was it. It was all over for me. It's my career ending right there. All right. We have enough banter to last us for several shows now.
Good deal.